Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on show once again Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us once a month on a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. And maybe there's some kind of problem that's come up that you need some advice with. Something needs to be repaired. You're thinking about doing some remodeling. You have a particular problem. Maybe you're concerned about your windows or your insulation or your attic or your basement or what have you, any and all of the various parts of the single-family home. Just pick up the telephone, give us a call, and Scott will do his best to help you out. 333-9455 is the number if you're here in Champaign, Urbana, where we are. But we do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here once again. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, David. Of course, I always enjoy coming out here.
We were talking a little bit before we got going about we expected probably there would be people who maybe would have some water questions.
Very good chance of that, yes. After the freezing temperatures we had, the snow that was piled up, and then all of a sudden lots and lots of rain and then thawing temperatures, the water really did not have a chance to soak down into the ground. So we had a lot of surface drainage, a lot of basements. Happened to make my way over to a couple of the big do-it-yourself stores over that particular weekend and noticed that all the shelves that originally held sump pumps were quite bare. So everybody was having problems.
Yeah. What is a sump pump really designed to do for you? I mean, what can you expect that to do, and what is it not going to be able to do?
Well, a sump pump is to take any water that has come through the foundation, collect it, and then pump it back outside. You do not want to connect it to a sanitary sewer. It's designed to be pumped out either to the surface or to a storm drain. It is basically to prevent water from accumulating in the basement. Ideally, we want to take care of it before it gets to the basement. But when we have situations like we had earlier this month, that sometimes is not always possible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got a couple of callers here. We'll get right at it and see how many people we can talk with. And we'll start with a caller in Champaign and on line number one. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
With those big winds we had yesterday, a piece of debris went into some of my siding and put a hole in it. And I was wondering what I need to do to replace that, replace the whole siding, or can I patch it, or what to do about that?
I'm assuming it's a piece of vinyl siding?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you can patch it. You can put a piece of vinyl in, either from the back side over the top side and silicone over it. But usually that is not cosmetically appealing. Mm-hmm. So most people, when they get a hole in a piece of siding, they do use a replacement piece and actually take that one out and put another one in.
Do you have any suggestions for I can find instructions how to do that?
Well, siding installation guidelines are available online pretty easily from the vinyl siding manufacturers.
Okay.
Vinyl siding is actually fairly easy to install. Now, to install properly is not necessarily the easiest thing, but to install it is fairly easy.
Okay.
You do want to remember when you put it on, you don't want to nail or staple the siding down tight to the house. In other words, you want to put the nail in down to the siding. There's a little slot that the nails go through, and you want the nail down to the siding, but you want the siding be able to slide back and forth behind the nail to allow for expansion and traction.
Okay, but slipping it in between the upper and the lower slats isn't a big problem?
No, you basically unlock the piece of siding that's damaged and the one above it. By unlocking, I mean you pull the bottom of it down, and it'll unlock from the piece below it. And then you can lift it up, and you can see where the nails and such are. It'll just basically peel back.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. I'm sure over time when your dad was here, one of those questions that we got time and time again from people was about types of siding and whether he thought one was better. That is, you know, is metal siding better than vinyl siding? Do you have a strong feeling one way or another?
Well, different sidings for different things. The vinyl siding is nice and easy to go up, but it is not quite as durable as, say, one of the metal sidings. However, it doesn't dent. It seems to be, you know, light hits, baseballs, things like that. In warm weather, the vinyl siding usually won't show, whereas a metal siding, you can get a dent in it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a little give and take here and there. The steel sidings with the vinyl coatings on them seem to be pretty durable. They're a little bit more expensive, a little harder to install. But the vinyl sidings that we're seeing most of is basically it's very resilient to damage, except when we get some really good cold weather. And as the siding starts getting older, vinyl does get a little bit more brittle. It's not a permanent siding. It's still temporary, but it'll last for 30 years or so.
Yeah. And I suppose another thing to keep in mind is if you buy vinyl siding, you'd better like the color because you can't paint it. The metal siding, you can actually, you have to have the right kind of paint, but you can paint it if you want. But the vinyl siding, you know, whatever it is, that's what it's going to be.
That is correct. Most of the paints out there do not adhere well to the vinyl, so you try and paint it and it ends up peeling off in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Next caller is in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm having some problems with a chimney, water leaking around the chimney in the attic. The we had a new roof put on, and they came back and took a second look at the flashing, but we've still got water in it over the weekend. And it's also sort of dripping on the outside, not dripping, but almost sort of bleeding through on the outside. It's exposed in the attic so we can see it. And a lot of the mortar seems to be crumbling. And I wonder, is the problem with the flashing if we're getting water in it, or is it some other problem?
Well, that's a very good question because this is something that does come up on a fairly regular basis. Most brick chimneys are not technically brick. They're usually a concrete block with a brick facing on the outside. The mortar cap on the top of the chimney has to be in good condition. If any water sits on top of that mortar cap and soaks down through the mortar cap, it can get between the concrete block and the brick and run down and then do just as exactly as you described, and that is start wicking back through the brick. It is very possible for a roofer to do a good job of putting in a flashing and counterflashing and still have a chimney leak if there's a crack or a split or a gap somewhere at the mortar cap at the top of the chimney. So that's probably where I'd start, is getting up there and take a look at the chimney itself and see if that concrete wash over the top of the chimney is in good condition. Ideally, I like to see about a 3 or 4 inch thick concrete cap over the top of a masonry chimney. For some reason or another, many of the chimneys in this area only have about a 2 or 3 inch, which then tapers off to next to nothing at the very outside edge. And the thinner concrete over time will tend to deteriorate a little bit and allow water capillary attraction to draw the water between the mortar cap and the brick and end up with chimney leaks that, oh, I get on roofs that have buckets of roofing tar slathered around the chimney and, oh, I can't find the leak. And you go up there and put something over the top of the chimney cap itself, the mortar cap, and the leak mysteriously disappears. So, yes, it's very possible you have a mortar cap problem rather than a flashing problem.
Okay, so that would be something that a mason would take care of, someone who does masonry rather than a roofer?
For the most part, yes, although there are some roofing products that could be put over the top. If you've got a badly cracked mortar cap, there is a self-adhesive mineral-surfaced roll roofing type material that could be cut and placed over the top of that mortar cap rather than slathering it full of roofing tar. A roofing tar or blackjack type sealant usually is good for about 2 to 3 years before it deteriorates a little bit with sunlight, dries and cracks. Whereas you could put a one of these self-adhesive roll roofing units up there, and it's probably good for about 10 or 12 years, so you don't have to do quite as much maintenance.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Next, we'll go to line number 3. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a 50-year-old house in downtown Champaign, and all the windows on the first floor are roll-out casement windows. And in all the nice heavy winds we've been having here lately, most of these windows are really leaking like sieves. And I'm wondering what I can do. Caulking's not going to really work because the tolerances on the inside where the casements roll in together are just so slim that I haven't figured out how to do weather stripping or caulking just really doesn't seem to be appropriate. I'm wondering what you might suggest.
Well, I'm a little surprised to hear that you're having that much problem with a casement, because a casement window is usually a fairly tight-fitting window. They swing out for ventilation, and then you close them or crank them shut, and then there's a latch handle on the side that is designed to draw the window the rest of the way to the sash and the sash to the frame, and that's usually where your weather seal is between the sash and that frame, and that latch handle usually is what will pull that tight. If you've got some water that's coming in around there, it makes it sound like we might have some debris, just dirt, tree debris, things like that around that seal. You might try opening the windows and cleaning the weather strip on the frame and see if it's getting in somewhere around there.
It's not so much water as just wind at this point. And all last fall, I was actually having some folks work on, you know, scraping and repainting. These are wooden windows, and as far as we can tell, there's not actually weather stripping or any kind of, you know, there's no real weather stripping on the face of the window or in the seat where they close into.
Okay, well, not being familiar with the window without looking at it, most of those casement windows do have some type of either a metal V-strip or a metal edge that they will seal on.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll just have to check again.
All right. Sorry, I couldn't do better.
No worries. Right. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Let's go to Champaign for another caller, line one. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a house in the Holiday Park area. So it's probably at least 30 years old. I don't know. It's a split level with a finished dry basement. And what happened was about a half-inch crack appeared along the basement wall, there is a main water line about 10 feet away and also a sewer line about 10 feet away. There was no surface water at all or accumulation. All the drains were working. No water on the inside. It wasn't humid, and just this crack appeared like the foundation went down and settled after it had been fine for many, many years, I mean, for decades. So the water company people came out and couldn't find any leaks, and the story on the sewer line is that it was an unlined, it did not have lining, and about once or twice a year they had to come in and clear it out because the roots would get in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they finally put lining in, and so my question is, what's the possibility that leakage from the sewer caused that settling, or am I way off there?
Well, I'm assuming that you're referring to one of the national bi-levels that is out there where you've got, what, five steps going down and five steps going up.
That's it. It's a bi-level.
Yeah. And those were a national home, which were actually, I don't want to say a prefab, but very close to a prefab or modular type unit. They built the walls over in Indiana, brought them in on a truck, and set them up in place. And engineered, they were quite well engineered. Now, your crack, is this a vertical crack or a horizontal crack?
It is a... it's not vertical and it's not horizontal. It's kind of diagonal. It's very weird because it's in a corner, but both sides of the corner didn't crack. Just one side did. I mean, I would think that if it was settling and going down in the corner, mm-hmm. you'd have a crack on both sides. So that's another odd piece of the puzzle, is that it's it just cracked. It's kind of like a diagonal crack at about 45-degree angle to the horizontal plane.
Okay.
It's not vertical or horizontal, but it's more horizontal than vertical.
Okay. Well, those lower levels were a concrete block, so we'll call that a stair-step crack. It kind of cracks along the block and goes down at an angle.
Exactly. Stair-step, it's along the where the blocks are, yeah.
Yeah. Usually a corner stair-step crack is a result of a downspout or a gutter system that dumped a bunch of water at a corner, lack of a downspout extension. And you get the water from the roof dumping in any one of the four corners, and we can get a lot of soil settlement, a lot of expansion contraction. We do have a fair amount of clay in the soil around here, so when it gets wet, it wants to expand. When it dries, it shrinks. Unfortunately, when it shrinks, it allows things to drop, and when it expands, it doesn't have enough pressure to lift them back up, so it kind of moves out from underneath it. So the soil kind of creeps out from underneath areas that have a high saturation of moisture, such as a corner with a downspout that doesn't have an extension on it or improper grading.
So to prevent further problems, I need to have an extension that takes the water well away from the corner.
Since you've got
do I just fill that crack in, or do I need something? Is it a structural problem?
Well, if it's just a corner crack, the structural issues are minimal. In other words, I don't think you're going to have to do anything with it. I would not try and seal it with a silicone, because then if you ever do have to do something with it, it's a mess to deal with. If you put just a little bit of mortar in the cracks, you'll probably be better off. I would start with getting the downspout out in the way a little bit farther and do that, and then add that little bit of mortar in there just so that you can among other things, monitor for future movement. A mortar, once you've put it in there, if there is more movement, you'll get another crack. So then you'll know that, hey, we have to go look and do something about it.
It shouldn't be one of those mortars that have like vinyl or something in there that expands. It should be just regular stuff so I could see a crack if it moves.
Yeah, I just used a regular mortar mix.
Okay.
Yeah, concrete mortar mix. Now, you did indicate something about your sewer line, and I know
that... the city came out and finally put a lining in it.
A lining in the city sewer, but not necessarily in what you've got for your sewer?
Oh, I don't know what my sewer status is.
Well, that's an issue in that area. Most of the houses in that area, particularly the ones that were put in built in around 1958, 1964, we had Orangeburg sewer line pipe, which is basically a asphalt impregnated cardboard sewer line. At the time, it was billed as the best stuff ever out there. And over the years, the asphalt leached out of it and left just a cardboard tube. And you run a couple of cleanouts through that cardboard tube, blocks up once in a while. And next thing you know, you have a cardboard tube that is perforated. So you do have some sewage lines that are collapses in that area. I know this personally because my house is also in Holiday Park, and I have already had to replace my Orangeburg. And I've watched over the years as my neighbors get the backhoe out there every once in a while and change out a sewer line. So there is a possibility you've got some Orangeburg sewer line between your house and the city sewer. Now, the city sewer, if they've put a liner in it, then we shouldn't be getting a lot of water coming through the foundation. Also, the sewer line in that particular neighborhood is quite deep. I know we put ours in, they had to go to almost 13 feet down, which is well below your lower level and should never be an issue.
All right. Okay. I gotcha.
So hopefully that'll take care of it. Yeah, generally the stair step cracks are related to guttering and downspouts. So take a look outside, maybe add just a little bit of dirt next to the foundation, get that downspout extension away, fill in that crack, and we'll go from there.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest is Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here once a month on a Monday. We talk about home maintenance. If you have a problem, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So how far away from the foundation should your downspouts be?
Well, I'm going to have to say at a minimum for a crawl space, 3 to 5 feet. For a basement, a minimum of 5 feet. Try and get it out. And then at that particular point, the ground that you're dumping it to should have a slope out and away from the house. What we run into, and it's a fairly common issue, when the builders build the basement or build the crawl space, they dig down to put in the footing. When they do that with a backhoe. They put in their foundation wall. Then they have to fill the hole back in on the outside. And that loose dirt or that fill dirt then compacts over the years. Now, most of the compaction takes place in the first 2 to 5 years. Obviously, the first year being the most important. But even 25, 30 years later, we're still getting a little bit more compaction. So you always have to watch that grade. What happens is the soil likes to settle and effectively create a little moat around your castle. And when you get this moat effect and the downspouts fall off, I noticed mine the other day was off. I had to run out there in the rain and go connect up my 10-foot downspout, make sure I didn't have water in my basement. If the downspouts come off right at that elbow, right at the corner, it sits in that low area or that moat area, and it will soak back through the foundation.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got another caller here in Champaign. We'll talk with them. Line number one.
Hi. Yes. I live in a Lustron house.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Oh, you say uh-oh?
Well, only uh-oh because that's not necessarily in my area of expertise. I'll do the best I can, though.
Okay, well, you know what they are.
I know exactly what a Lustron house is, yes. One of the all-steel houses with the foam panels for insulation.
Well, my question is not about insulation. I'm not sure what the case is there. They don't have very much.
This is true.
Although they were cutting edge at the time.
Yes, they were.
The construction generally is really great. We love the house. But after almost 60 years, the roof is beginning to need some attention. And it's sort of sculpted like a Spanish tile roof.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, doesn't have a nice, smooth, level surface. And so my question is, what can be done?
Okay. If I recall, those had a steel panel roof. That, you're right, it had some type of almost a tile texture to it.
Right.
There's a couple dozen of those Lestron's houses here in Champaign-Urbana, and I just have not had the opportunity to work with them. I know that my father did a fair amount with those when he was with the University Small Homes Council,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know that there's anybody at the University Small Homes Council any longer that has dealt with those. I'm going to have to defer this to an expert such as my father. So if you'd be willing to call over to the office and talk to him, I'm sure that he could give you a lot more information on that than I could.
Okay, I will do that. My thought was that there are lots of metal buildings now, and some of them have roofs, although they're not shaped like this. They're not smooth. And I was wondering whether there's something that roofers do, whether you spray on something rubbery or anything like that.
Well, there's a couple of different things that can be done with some steel roofing. Like I say, unfortunately, I know those were a very... a panelized type construction. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar enough with them to be able to give you a, you know, without doing some research on it or consulting somebody, I can't give you an answer. I don't want to give you the wrong information.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Well, again, questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455.
Yeah, those Lestron houses, you don't see too many of them. Every once in a while you get in one of the neighborhoods, particularly over in West Champaign, and you see this house that looks like it's a bunch of steel squares put together.
Hmm.
And they're usually an insulated panel with a steel facing. Unfortunately, there's only about 2 inch of insulation in there. So at the time they were built, which was in the late 50s, they were definitely cutting edge, something you'd see on your new television.
Yeah. And I guess the difficulty is that if you lived in one of these houses and you wanted to put in more insulation, there's no way to do it.
Yeah, there's little or no way of doing it because there's no way without furring out on the inside and ruining the look of the house.
Yeah.
And you definitely don't want to do it on the outside unless you're putting on like a foam insulation. Again, completely changing the look of the house.
Yeah.
But I know of them and I know they're out there, but I just don't have the information in the database on that. That's... they're a little before my time, and I've done my best to try and find out. But when there's only about 10 or 12 of them in town, it's kind of hard to get good at looking at them when you haven't seen many of them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. This was one of these kinds of houses that was developed. The idea was that it was supposed to be it was prefabricated, so it was supposed to be affordable, easy to produce. And the selling point, I guess, was because they were metal, they were supposed to be essentially fireproof and maintenance-free. And and at the time, as you say, it was a cutting-edge kind of idea.
Yep.
Because the method of construction and the style of the house was going to be really different than most of the other houses that would have been around at the time.
That's true. So very unique.
All right. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. You got a home maintenance question, give us a call and you talk with our guest, Scott Spies. Next up, we'll talk with someone in St. Charles, Missouri on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hey, you guys sound surprised to hear somebody from outside Champaign.
Well, in that direction at least, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, my question is, we're just talking about downspouts on the corners of houses and that.
Yeah.
And I need to do that to my house. My only concern is I live on kind of like a hillside, the road is. And I know the neighbors down the hill from me have drainage problems. And if I had downspouts that drain about to the middle of my yard and it runs to their yard or runs to them, does that put me at any liability for them?
Well, depending on how, if the builder did things correctly, there's a low spot or a swale between your house and their house to kind of drain it off to the sides and take it to road ditches. I know a lot of the neighborhoods were not necessarily done that way. There is no liability. Your responsibility is to take and dump the water from your house onto your property in an area that it drains away. The responsibility of the other builders was to build the houses high enough or with enough of a swale so that they could take the water from their houses and drain it away from the house to where it drained away. And eventually it all ended up in a low spot and either a lake or a river took it all away. No, there is no liability of you dumping it out there. If you're putting it in an area that's obviously troublesome, in other words, you know you can tell that this is what's going to be an issue, my guess is you'd want to get with your neighbor and say, hey, look, I've got to get the water from my house out and away. We got to get yours away. Maybe you guys can work a deal where you put a tile in or do some landscaping changes to make sure that that water doesn't flood the lower level of the neighboring houses. But, yeah, anytime you're on a hill, water is going to run downhill, and actually a lot of that's where yours is coming from, is uphill from there.
Right.
So it's a matter of getting it out to swales and low spots and ditches and stuff alongside or between the houses to drain it away.
Okay, well, thanks for the advice. I'll get with my neighbor.
All right, thank you. We'll go on here back to Champagne. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This is my first winter in Champaign and in a cold place, and my first winter in my home, and I have a lot of condensation on the really cold days on the inside of my windows. Is that normal?
No.
So much that there's even ice in some areas.
Well, a lot depends on the windows. If you've got single glazed windows, then that's not that uncommon. But
well, they're
most
storm windows. They're double pane, and they're pretty new.
Okay, then you should not have moisture condensation on the inside of the windows.
Okay.
If you've got that, you've got a high humidity problem somewhere in the house. Something is producing humidity in the house, either a power humidifier set too high.
We don't have a humidifier on.
You've got a crawl space?
No, it's a slab.
It's on a concrete slab.
Yeah.
You say you don't have a humidifier on.
No, there's a humidifier in the garage, but it's not turned on or hooked up, I don't think.
Okay, well, that's one of the things we need to check. Because
okay.
It's they really don't do anything when they're on, but if they're on and incorrectly set, it will be dumping a lot of water in.
Okay.
I would try and locate the water line to it and make sure that it is literally turned off.
Okay.
And see if that doesn't help.
It only does it on the really, really cold days.
Well, that's when the humidity level in the house is high enough to start condensing, yes.
Okay.
There are other moisture sources, such as the dryer, clothes dryer not being vented to the outside.
It's vented to the outside.
Okay. Bathroom vent fans not necessarily getting vented out. Hopefully they're vented at least into the attic area, if not out through the attic.
Okay.
It
doesn't have to do with the quality of the windows or...
Usually not. If you've got condensation on the windows because the humidity level in the house is too high. Now, if you've got blatant air leaks around there and we've got just air moving past them, yes, we can get some frost and ice issues. And that's usually if somebody did not insulate
right.
the rough opening between the window sash and the...
Well, we went around and put weather stripping around them because they were leaking some air, but mm-hmm. there's still a lot of condensation.
Well, then we really need to try and figure out where that moisture source is, and I'm looking at that power humidifier because a lot of those humidifiers, if they fail, the valve gets some dirt in it. It runs water continuous, whether you've got
okay.
it turned on or off.
Okay.
So I would say take the water supply and actually disconnect it or turn it off completely.
All right, we'll check that out.
See if that doesn't work. If that doesn't do it, give me a call because there is also a few... few items that are not necessarily healthy that could be creating a problem.
A crack
in a heater, heat exchanger
can
put moisture in. An improperly venting water heater and furnace system. So there are some sources that are not good. So if we've got, if we don't have the power humidifier running, we don't have the dryer vented inside the house, we do have the bathroom vent fans out, and we still have humidity in the house, we need to really look at a couple other things. So feel free to give me a call, and we'll see if we can hook up and make sure that we don't have some serious problems.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank
Bye.
You. On again to another caller. This is someone listening this morning in Indiana, and on line number two. Hello. Yes.
I'm moving into a older, large house. It's basically going to be turned into three apartments, adequate apartments. And this is all being done by family members making decisions and talking to relatives about the house and stuff. I've never been in the house except once. And I'm sort of concerned about later issues of an old house. Some of the sort of things I should pay attention to, from you know the roofing down to you know, downspouts and things like that. What kind of cracks, if they appear, need to be attended to? Sort of those general things, because I'm one fellow against five women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the situation, and I need to know some information, or at least be directed to a website that would have it, or maybe even a book. that you, hopefully you and your father may have written, you know, give that information. But anything you could do would be very, very helpful. That's what I need some information on.
Well, when doing conversions like that, generally speaking, you want to avoid removing load-bearing walls, so hopefully whoever is doing your conversion work is helping out or doing the helping out work with you is competent enough to know what they can and can't take out.
Yeah.
Adding more partition walls usually doesn't create any problems because partition walls are not load-bearing walls, and usually you'd use those to separate rooms and separate areas.
Okay.
And not being non-load-bearing walls, they really shouldn't be transferring weight. So I doubt very much that you're going to run into any real structural issues unless you're trying to take out some walls or change some things.
Yeah. But they haven't mentioned that. I think the original setup is just going to be there's going to be a labyrinth here one place or another, and that's just the way life is going to be.
Yeah.
They're putting their attention into new furnaces, central air, and that sort of thing. And most of the stuff's been checked out, but I was just a little concerned since I was put on the outside of this that somebody was doing something, and I should know about it, that's all.
Well, you do have to remember, and you said multiple furnaces, which is good. You're not supposed to mix air from one unit to another to be an official apartment.
Okay.
So you should have separate heating and cooling systems unless you're running hot water.
Yeah.
If you're running a hot water system, then that would be different. But with a forced air, you're supposed to use separate units for each apartment.
Okay.
So you're not pulling or blowing smoke from one unit to another.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's helpful. I see the logic of it, so I'll tend to it. And thanks a lot. I've been listening for years, you know, but now it's in my lap. So thanks.
Well, good luck with the project.
Yeah.
And of course, anytime the exterior of the house doesn't care how many units are inside, so the exterior is still pretty much the same thing we do with the rest of the houses we recommend. Make sure the grading is sloped away from the house, downspouts extended out, things like that. Roofing, same way. It doesn't care how many units are inside. As long as there's attic ventilation, you should be in good shape. So those things really aren't going to change.
The louvered openings up near the top of the peaks of the roof. Then.
Okay, yeah, the gable vents, those should remain open.
Yeah.
So when they're doing the remodeling, I doubt they change many of the really major structural components of the house.
Yeah.
You do have to watch the heating and cooling, guys. If you're taking it from one furnace to three furnaces, make sure that they're not cutting any of the main girders to get their ductwork run the right direction.
Good idea. I would not have thought of that. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Thanks again, David.
Oh, sure thing.
All right.
Let's just talk next with somebody here, somebody in Champaign calling on a cell phone. This is on line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have got a problem with my upstairs bathroom. I smell damp in it, and I've been smelling damp for 3 months at least, and my husband claims that he does not. So I don't know where to go from here. What could be causing the smell, and is it possible that it's coming from the attic?
Well, anything's possible. What kind of shower or tub surround do you have in there?
We have a whirlpool tub, which is rarely used, and we have a shower.
Okay.
That's an enclosed separate unit.
So they're fiberglass units?
It is a fiberglass unit.
Okay. Well, that's one plus. I was a little concerned that we might have some ceramic tile that had some cracks and you're getting some water back inside the wall. With a fiberglass unit, we usually don't have that. It is not uncommon for those shower bases, the fiberglass shower bases, where the drain pipe connects to the bottom. They can leak a little bit down into the floor, wall, ceiling area, whatever it is that happens to be below that. There's a rubber seal between the PVC pipe and the fitting in the shower drain, and every once in a while it has to be tightened up. So if you notice the smell more with the shower door open or closed or anything, or is it just...
No, I really smell it when I'm in my bed, and I can smell it coming from the bathroom. I don't smell it as much when I'm in the bathroom.
Okay.
And one thing I should mention also is that last year the pipes broke in that bathroom from the ice cold. And I don't know if maybe something was done improperly at that time, though it didn't show up, you know, except 3 months ago.
Hmm.
And also, you mentioned tiling. We do have tiling in the bathroom. It's just that the shower itself is fiberglass, but surrounding on the outside of it is tile.
And that should be a problem. It's when we run into a crack in the grout inside the shower that water capillary traction draws back in through there.
Yeah, no, don't have that.
And if you had a cracked pipe at some point in time, it's possible water got into some of the insulation. If they didn't get that insulation changed or dried out, we could have just a little bit of moisture trapped inside some insulation in one of the walls.
Okay.
So there's any number of different possibilities. I don't know. There are some companies here in town that can do air quality tests where they can sample the air in that area, make sure that there's no mold and mildew that's seeping in that we don't know about or can't find.
Okay.
Do you have any condensation on any of your windows or anything in the morning?
No.
Okay, so
no,
we don't have high humidity in the house.
No, I don't think so.
Well, unfortunately, odor problems like that are very difficult to trace because the odor theoretically moves with airflow, but not completely. Now, is this on a crawl space or basement or?
Well, I'm trying to think. I think it's a crawl space. It's an addition to the original house, and we do have a basement, but I believe this is above a crawl space.
Okay, well, one of the things you might want to have somebody do is check the crawl space, check for any humidity down there, any standing water, but also to double check and see if one of the heat ducts may have come disconnected. Maybe what you're getting is a little bit of odor out of the crawl space.
Okay.
So it's not all that uncommon that I'm crawling through a crawl space and I find a heat duct with about a 2-inch air gap because something didn't fit right, and you get just a little bit of air pulled from the crawl space into the room.
Okay.
So you might have somebody just check the crawl space.
You don't think I should be sending anybody up into the attic yet?
I don't think the attic is going to be where it's coming from at this point. Usually
okay.
The attic is sealed pretty well and quite well ventilated, so most of the air in the attic dissipates very rapidly.
Okay. All right, I'll try the crawl space and the drain pipe, and did you mention anything else?
Well, nothing that I can think of off the top of my head. Just make sure that the area where the crack pipe, make sure it's dry again, still dry since they've done the repairs. Again, somebody in the crawl space will have to check for that.
Okay, very good.
All right,
thanks for the call. We have about 15 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580. It's our regular monthly show on home maintenance. We do it once a month on a Monday, and the guest is Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. So if you got some kind of problem, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455.
Yeah, some of those odor calls can be kind of interesting. I find a little bit of anything and everything in houses from one, we had a squirrel stuck in a flue pipe for a water heater, and every time he ran the laundry, he had an odor in the house and he was sure that it was something with the laundry equipment. Well, it just turned out that that's when the water heater would turn on for the longest period, and we had to extricate the squirrel out of the flue pipe, and now the water heater drafted properly, and his odor went away. Mm-hmm. Drain pipes, I found a kitchen drain pipe disconnected and going into a crawl space. Why they didn't find it a lot sooner than after I was there, I don't know. But so odor problems can come from all sorts of different places. They're kind of hard to track down, a little trickier.
Well, aside from your dead squirrels, in most of the cases, are we talking about something that one way or another is a moisture issue?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, a lot of it is moisture issues because that's what you'll give as her problem was a damp smell, the mold and mildew, the unfriendly odors, wet gym socks, what have you. So, a lot of it can be a humidity or moisture type issue. So that's what I usually go in looking for.
Yeah.
I can remember one when I first started working for my father, we had a ghost. We had a young lady that claimed that late at night her house had some really foul smells to the point where she was actually sleeping in her car in the evenings because she was afraid that there was actually somebody or something getting in the house. And I went over there several times and I never found anything. It's just odors can be tricky to trace down.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on. We'll talk with some more folks, and we will go next to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a national home in Urbana on a slab. And you know how they have those modular ceilings?
Yes.
With the cracks? Well, somebody before we owned the house filled in most of the cracks to make it look like a smooth ceiling.
Uh-huh.
Well, now with cold weather, over the couple of years we've owned the house, the cracks have started to expand and contract. And things are popping out.
Okay.
So, I mean, is our only solution basically to scrape the ceilings and take everything out and just repaint the ceilings?
Pretty much, because, yes, there is going to be some expansion, contraction, some movement. The house doesn't stay solid. Another thing you consider is putting some thin wood strips over the top of it and covering over the cracks rather than trying to pull them all out. It might be a little bit neater and probably a little more time efficient to cover them than to try and open them back up again and clean them up.
Well, some of them, you can tell they're actually, the stuff is popping out, and so in some cases, I think we actually do have to scrape it out because little pieces are starting to fall. So, but putting wood strips over them and then just painting them to match the ceiling?
Yeah, a cosmetic cover-up, basically.
Okay, then my other question, I heard you talking about the sewer pipes that were used. My house was built in about 1955, I believe. Would those have been used in that area, too? I'm over on East Michigan Avenue in Urbana.
I have not found that Orangeburg tile used as much over there. The national homes were the same as what they built on the west side of Champaign.
Uh-huh.
But I've not found as much of the Orangeburg tile there on the east side of Urbana. Most of that was done in cast.
Okay, well, that's a relief. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We'll go on here to somebody in LaSalle and line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling in concern with the person that had the condensation.
Uh-huh.
We also had that problem. I leave the blinds up about a foot or two, but I can close the curtains, and it eliminates the condensation on my windows. Otherwise, I would have to be varnishing them every year. And at first, when we built the house, we didn't have a rug on that lower level. And when we put the rug down on that lower level, that eliminated a great deal of the moisture.
Kept things a little bit warmer. Yeah, keeping air moving past the windows is a good thing. It's amazing how a good heavy blind will change the temperature around the windows quite a bit and get the windows cold enough to create the ice and condensation problems.
Yeah. I still think, though, your point is a really good one about you. It's a good idea to try to get some handle on where the moisture is coming from. And if, as you suggested, one thing you really want to be careful of is that your furnace and your water heater, if you have gas furnace and gas water heater, that they are venting properly to the outside, because you don't want that stuff building up in the house.
Yeah, and the new law here in the state of Illinois is that we have to have a carbon monoxide detector in all the homes, rentals or owner-occupied. Unfortunately, it kind of gives you a false sense of security on some of this, because I have run into an awful lot of furnaces and water heaters that, while not drafting, were burning well enough that they would not produce enough carbon monoxide to trip a carbon monoxide detector.
Mm-hmm.
You'd still be getting the moisture back in the house and still be getting a low-level carbon monoxide. But most of the carbon monoxide detectors that they are installing sound off at about 35 parts per million. And it is not uncommon for me to stick a carbon monoxide detector directly into the flue of a furnace and water heater and find that they're burning in the 13 to 25 part per million range, which is basically enough that you would not notice it on your carbon monoxide detector. So if you've got moisture in the house that you just can't find, it's not a bad idea to check the drafting on the water heater furnaces. Now, on most of the older furnaces, it was pretty easy to check. They had a couple openings in the metal cover, and you just kind of put your hand above the opening and see if you felt the warm, humid air coming out and around. Water heaters have the diverter on top of it. That's the little cone-shaped piece, usually on 3 or 4 legs. Put a mirror, a compact mirror or something up there. When the water heater is running, if the mirror fogs, it's an indication that the unit is not drafting properly and we're getting some of that back in. Amazingly enough, I actually found one here last fall where the water heater had been put in 7 years ago, and whoever installed it was not a plumber and didn't realize that pipe had to be vented to the outside of the house. The water heater literally had no vent pipe on it whatsoever in this house for 6 or 7 years. I would have been interested to see what a carbon monoxide detector would have done in there, but I did test that one because I was quite shocked and found that it was burning nicely at about 14 parts per million, which is burning clean, but it's still putting a lot of flue gases in the house that we don't want. So. If you've got condensation on the windows and we can't find a water source, there are certain things to be looking for. A crack in a heat exchanger could be an issue.
All right. Well, let's talk with some more folks here and go next to Champaign, line 2.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question that relates to the flues also.
Okay.
I hope I can describe this. I have, down in the basement, I have a gas fireplace, and I can see, you know, I look behind it, and I can see where the flue comes up. And sitting next to it, back behind a brick wall there where the fireplace is set in, sitting next to it is the water heater, and it has a flue that angles up and joins the flue from the fireplace. And those two then enter into a larger pipe and go up outside. Now, the thing I was getting a little dripping water from flue, and so I got up there and was looking around at it, and I find that after those two flues join and go up, there's also a duct that comes off from that and goes about, maybe 15 feet one direction, makes a turn, and goes a few more feet, and then it's been taken apart. So it's just open on the on that other end. And my question is, I put a detector down there to see if I'd pick up any sign of problem, and I haven't. But is there some reason why this would be an open pipe under those circumstances, and is that a danger?
Well, anytime we have an open flue pipe is not a desirable situation unless it is connected to an appliance. If somebody had an appliance there that it was coming over to that particular flue, then that's one thing. They should have capped it at the origin when they removed the appliance.
So would the thing be to just put a cap on it? And
yeah, I would remove as much of it as possible and cap it as close to the main stack as possible.
Possible.
By having an opening in the flue, we can actually reduce the drafting effect of the other appliances. In other words, let's say we've got a 4 or 5 inch diameter flue pipe.
Mm-hmm.
We're using a differential in temperature to use it to draw the flue gases outside the house. In other words, it's cooler outside than it is inside, so the hot air inside wants to rise up and go to the outside.
Uh-huh.
When you have an extra opening in there, some of our stack or our draft effect can be drawn from that other opening, and thereby reducing the amount of draft we get at our actual combustion products.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, additional or extra openings in a flue pipe are usually not good.
Not good. It seemed that way, but I was just surprised.
They sell caps. They sell caps. So
if I have water dripping out of one of those pipes, then that suggests that I have a leak around the flashing where it comes out of the roof.
Not necessarily.
Oh. Okay.
Depending on how long the run is in the attic. I mean, if you see the flue pipes there in the basement or lower level or whatever, and it goes up through the main level, then it goes out through the attic. When you burn any materials, one of the byproducts is a water vapor.
So
that water vapor is actually, it's a warm, humid air. It's going up through the flue pipe. Well, if the flue pipe has enough of a run in the attic to cool the combustion gases down, we can actually get condensation inside the pipe.
So this would be a problem in the winter?
Yes.
Okay. So I've never noticed this in the summer, but...
It's quite possible you've got a section of pipe that you've got a long, not necessarily horizontal, but a low-pitched area going from one side of the... coming up into the attic and then going out the back side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a fairly long area and the flue gases are cooling down enough, you can get the condensation. It'll tend to run back down through the pipe and drip out in a few spots.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. In a case like that, would you recommend that that pipe be insulated in the attic?
In some cases, we've had to do that, wrap them with a piece of non-flammable insulation, fiberglass, something like that, preferably not with a paper backing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to insulate it where it goes through any protrusions. You want to be able to get some airflow around anything that's wood. But the pipe itself, yeah, we've had to... put some insulation on it just so that we don't end up with the condensation. It's amazing how much water can actually condense in one of those things.
Yeah.
Ideally, they should have enough slope on the pipe that the air keeps moving through it fast enough to re-evaporate the moisture and draw it outside, basically prevent it from condensing in there. But every once in a while, we'll get one where they... water heater and furnace is on the garage at the front side of the house. And, of course, for looks, we don't want the flue pipe coming out the front side of the house, so they have to run it all the way through the attic to the back of the house and up. And we've run into some condensation problems there.
All right. We'll go next to a caller in Normal, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you for taking this call. Mm-hmm. I have a problem in my basement. Every time the water level is like it is now, there's a certain section of the carpeting that just gets sopping wet. I presume that there are cracks in the basement floor underneath that carpeting, and I wonder what you're supposed to do about that.
Well, again, depending on where it's coming from, if it's actually groundwater where we have situations like we've had this winter.
It seems to be.
Yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, there's some basement dewatering systems that if it's extreme enough that we need to collect that water and drain it out. Otherwise, I'd take a look in that corner. Do you have a downspout or gutter or a low spot in the yard?
No, it's really actually sort of in the middle of the room rather than toward the boundaries.
Well, my guess is that's where the low spot is, and it's probably seeping from one of the edges somewhere. You might check your carpet around the edges and see if there's a, you know, it could be a fairly thin area that runs into a low spot and pools and gives you your wet area.
So you think the initial entrance of the water would be toward the edges rather than in the middle where it's coming?
Very rarely do we have hydronic pressure actually pushing up in the middle of a concrete slab. It's possible.
Oh, really?
Do you have a sump pump?
Yes, I do, but okay. It's in the other room.
Okay, but if you had enough hydronic pressure to push up through the slab, it would have pushed that water right to the sump pump. So I really don't think that it's a hydronic. I don't think it's bubbling up from underneath.
You don't, huh?
No, because in order for the water to be pushed upwards, it requires a force, and that force should create enough effort to get the water to come out at the sump pump, which, of course, is well below the slab level.
Huh.
So rather than push through the concrete, I'd rather take the path of least resistance, which would then be, of course, your sump pump openings.
Well, it's just so far away from the sump pump area. It just seems like it has to be coming up from right underneath where it gets.
I won't say it's impossible, but it's not as likely.
It's not viable. But if it is underneath the carpeting in that area, is there a way to seal those cracks if there are cracks in the...
If you've got a hydronic pressure, we need to take the water out from underneath it because sealing it doesn't do much. Most of the sealers will pop
okay.
out.
And that would require the system you mentioned earlier.
A couple of different systems, yeah, or we can come out and take a look at it and see if we can come up with some ideas for you.
Do you come to Normal?
I have been known to do so.
All right. And what is your office number? Could you give me that?
The Spies Home Inspection Service line is 217-356-5048.
217-356-5408.
No, 5048.
217. Say it again.
217-356-5048.
5-0. Thank you very much.
Right.
Bye.
Well, we're going to have to stop, I'm sorry to say, because we have used up our time. In fact, we had just a little extra time because the markets are closed today. We'll have to leave it at that. My apologies. We have a caller that we can't take. But I'm sure that Scott will be back next month, and we'll do it all over again.
Well, thank you very much, David, and thank you for all the callers for calling in today.
All right. Scott Spies. He's an inspector with the Spies Home Inspection Service, and he's on the program once a month, and it's always on a Monday.